Live from WNUR News, I'm Brendan Prizman. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. Today is Friday, January 31st, 2025. Happy end of January, everyone. We finally made it, and tonight on WNUR News, we have a whole host of stories to celebrate. Norovirus is raging across Northwestern's campus. Students are having a ball at the Dolphin Show's Cinderella. Northwestern faculty members are showing off their artsy sides. And of course, everyone's favorite check-in on the weather outside with Fairweather Friends. All those stories and so much more tonight on WNUR News at 6. Welcome into the OACR, and thank you so much for spending some time with us to kick off your Friday evening. Outbreaks of a highly contagious stomach bug have been sweeping across the country, and now it's arrived on Northwestern's campus. Medill's Juliet Allen reports.
Last week, Northwestern Student Health Services treated about 50 cases of norovirus. But campus health officials say that the true number of cases may have been double or triple that number. The student president of one campus residence, Cameron Lara, said they had an outbreak earlier this week.
Our RA put a sign up that was said, like, do not enter biohazard.
The dorm also relocated a scheduled event to another building to help reduce the risk of spreading the virus.
Ultimately, we're all in a confined space together. There's only so much I can do.
If you do anything, campus physician Rajat Jain said that frequent hand washing is the key to preventing infection. So get scrubbing. For WNUR News, I'm Juliet Allen, Evanston, Illinois.
And speaking of focusing on your health, if you've been to the gym this month, you've probably seen a lot more people than you're used to. New Year's resolutioners looking to lose weight have taken over. But January's almost over. It's over at the end of the night. So what's next for them? WNUR's Jessica Watts has the story.
Some of the most common New Year's resolutions. But according to Columbia University, only 25% of people keep those goals after January. This growing problem is also common at Northwestern. Emma Manley works for Northwestern Recreation.
I think a lot of people fall off because they commit too hard. I think Northwestern students tend to have, like, if they're taking four classes or, like, if they're taking a bunch of labs or something, it's like it's going to look different every day for them.
Starting next month, look forward to not sharing a machine when you are working out. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
And pivoting now to the wider Evanston community, the Evanston City Council didn't vote on a controversial climate action policy on Monday evening. The new law would have pushed Northwestern to reduce its carbon emissions. WNUR's Brandon Condritz has the latest.
The Healthy Buildings Ordinance would force 300 Evanston properties to only use clean energy by 2050. Northwestern owns many of the biggest buildings covered by the law. The university called the policy impractical in a last-minute letter before Monday's meeting. Many public comments said the same. So after an hour of debate, council delayed the vote. Northwestern student activist Ruth DeBono was there. She's hoping the city will act soon.
We know that with the climate crisis, it's only a matter of time before these actions are going to have to be taken. It's better to start now than to just keep waiting and delaying as they are.
The vote's on the table at council's next meeting, Monday, February 10th. Brandon Condritz, WNUR News.
Northwestern faculty and students gathered on Wednesday at the Buffett Institute for Global Affairs. The group discussed ways to strengthen the university's global connection to the arts. Mariah Petway reports.
Conference room. Dean E. Patrick Johnson started off by sharing his research on Caribbean art. He hopes to bring more voices into the conversation.
One of the things that I've been trying to do is find ways at the university to plug in the arts into every aspect of the university. And one way to do that is providing spaces of collaboration.
Faculty pitched ideas like using music to connect with orphans in Gaza and collaborating with puppet artists in Vietnam. Buffett is excited to help turn these ideas into action. For WNUR News, I'm Mariah Petway.
The Northwestern comedy group Meow turned 50 last year to much fanfare. Exhibits endearing, celebrity visits, and a grand alumni reunion defined last season for the improv group. But now heading into their 51st season, the group doesn't want to get lost in the past. Ella Barnes has more.
Here, Meow is looking to balance history with fresh energy. Every member writes 2 new sketches for each rehearsal. With 5 rehearsals a week and 2 shows this quarter, co-director and cast member Brendan Dahl says his goal is to maintain last year's momentum while ensuring the Yow remains a space for new creative expression.
I don't want it to feel like it's this unwieldy, grand, traditional thing. I want it to just feel like it's a fun kind of cultural rebellion. That's how they talk about it at the beginning, but also just like a fun party that all the students want to go to.
Their first show of the quarter, the Meowgic School Bus, plays in Shanley Pavilion this Friday and Saturday at 7 and 10 p.m. For WNUR News, I'm Ella Barnes.
And speaking of Northwestern student entertainment groups, The Dolphin Show is back with another musical to warm the Evanston community this winter. Here's Yumi Talud with the story.
Khan Auditorium is home to The Dolphin Show, the largest student-produced musical in America. This year, they're bringing magic to the stage, with Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. Rachel Rubin, the student director, led everyone in making the magic happen.
Getting to work with a team of people like this, like a team of peers, and getting to put on a show of this scale and scope at this point in my life is just, like, insane. Yeah, it's been a blast.
Cinderella opened in Cannes last weekend and only has 2 more shows, one tonight, Friday, and the other tomorrow, Saturday. For WNUR News, I'm Yumi Talud.
Energy use today is becoming more and more sustainable. However, the coal plants of old have seen some devastating effects. Gabe Shumway and John Kowalski have more on how the pivot to sustainability has affected local communities.
Amidst the increasing global shift toward renewable energy sources, communities in Northwest Indiana have had their fair share of turmoil. The Michigan City Generating Station is nearly 100 years old, according to the Michigan City Public Library. And while the retirement process has already begun for this coal-fired power plant, it's not set to be fully retired until 2028. For years, local residents have been expressing their own concerns about the risk of pollution caused by this plant. For these residents, the risks have been life-changing.
We did some sort of canvassing of the area and found out that individuals in the community had, you know, they were waking up and they were having, you know, this blanketed black dust on their cars.
That's Danita Scully, the Environmental Climate Justice Chair at the Michigan City branch of the NAACP. She was referring to the west side of Michigan City, which has been disproportionately affected by the coal ash and fly ash from the station. Coal ash is a waste product produced through operations at coal-fired power plants. It is often stored in landfills known as coal ash waste pits.
There is a high concentration of coal ash waste pits all over Indiana. One of the major concerns with these waste pits is their ability to contaminate waterways. This is especially true for a plant that lies right on the shores of Lake Michigan. In this case, the waste pits can leach into the groundwater or risk overflowing during floods. There is a steel wall built around the site by the Northern Indiana Public Service Company, known as NIPSCO. The wall has been complete for over 50 years, raising concerns among local residents who fear that the seawall will corrode and cause a leak into Lake Michigan.
This is the drinking water for 10 million people at least. Once that wall goes, big oops. I mean, how do you clean that up?
That's Susan Thomas, the policy and press director for Just Transition Northwest Indiana. She called the seawall a ticking time bomb. Repairing the seawall is a point of emphasis for NIPSCO in 2025. In a statement to WNUR News, NIPSCO said, quote, "NIPSCO and third-party professional engineers monitor and inspect the walls annually, based on standard industry definitions. Regular maintenance and improvements are made to ensure the continued safety of the protective barrier since its installation. NIPSCO is currently executing plans to replace the Trail Creek seawall structure in 2025, although studies conducted last year showed the seawall's useful life is another 5 to 8 years," unquote. This is not simply a matter of the Lake Michigan shores, however, as the coal ash has already had drastic effects on nearby communities.
We really couldn't see through a just transition for the site unless we really began to tackle the issue of the coal ash crisis at the Michigan City Generating Station. On the shores of Lake Michigan, And as we dug deeper, we realized that not only was the coal ash still there, but it was also leaching into Lake Michigan and contaminating the groundwater, the neighboring tributaries. And so it was just blowing the lid off of what we really came to be this silent crisis.
That's Just Transition Northwest Indiana's executive director, Ashley Williams. Community members who heard about the contaminated groundwater had a variety of solutions, from personal projects to advocacy. The well water quality is so poor that NIPSCO is mandated to deliver bottled water to several Town of Pines households. Town of Pines resident and environmental advocate Paul Kissel built his own reverse osmosis system when he initially moved, not wanting to risk any side effects of the well water.
I didn't hesitate to install a system like that. It's a very simple system that just, you know, works on a membrane that forces water through the membrane, dropping off any contaminants, and just flushes those down the drain.
Though the Town of Pines receives this bottled water, it is merely for drinking. Residents are still using this well water to bathe and wash their clothes. While some have accepted their fate, Kissel believes that more can still be done.
Ultimately, the only way that this is going to be resolved anywhere in the country where coal ash has been dumped, placed, or used as top, as fill, as clean fill, is to eliminate it, to dig it up, to remove it wherever it is, to find every little trace of it, and to preserve water, fresh water for drinking purposes, that it has to be removed from wherever it is, and placed into appropriately lined, protected, specially designated waste facilities.
The mass amounts of industry in Northwest Indiana also pose concerns toward cultural land use. The industry pollutants pose risks to native species and cultural practices stretching back thousands of years. The Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians have worked on a cultural trail at the Indiana Dunes site. As part of their work on the site, they hope to reestablish traditional gathering practices for wild rice in the area. But currently, they are concerned the soil health may pose a threat to safe consumption.
One of the grants that I just received is for me to look at some of those plants that are going to be able to be harvested and gathered by tribal citizens. We're going to take samples of them to try to determine how are they healthy enough to eat? Are they safe enough to eat? Because of all of the heavy industry that's there, are there, you know, heavy metals or chemicals that might be analytes of chemicals that might be getting into these plants and these plant tissues?
That's Jennifer Canine, the director of the Quabdanao Otoka team of Potawatomi Indians. This group works toward improving environmental quality, natural resources, conservation, and agriculture. Not only will this potential cultivation of wild rice rekindle indigenous land use practices, but it may also attract more biodiversity to Michigan City.
So wild rice is a plant that everybody wants to eat and everybody wants to be around. So it's kind of one of those things that if it's in the area, it will draw things in. So, you know, the birds will come to the area. And not just like geese, but also lots of blackbirds, lots of other waterfowl come into the area. And not just that, but there are different birds that use it for nestings.
Visitors can walk along the cultural trail and take educational classes at the Indiana Dunes. With the impending shutdown of the Michigan City Generating Station comes the opportunity for new projects. With the vast Indiana Dunes National Park just to its right, how will the land that the plant currently operates on be used in the future?
Securing the edge of the site, because as we talked about the leaking of the groundwater, which is contaminated with all that residual coal ash moving into Lake Michigan, once that is taken care of in a serious way, that's not collapsing steel sheet pile walls, there's opportunity there that to have then have a secure site and a slower cleanup process that can really allow that to be a more long-term thing that makes the site immediately accessible and usable for Michigan City residents.
That's Kevin Corrigan, a landscape architect who grew up in nearby Beverly Shores, Indiana. He is currently working in Colorado, drafting a plan for the site as a friend to Just Transition Northwest Indiana. He calls it choreographing closure, and he sees the future of the site as a gateway to the beauty that the area has to offer.
So Susan used the term gateway, and that's really what this site is. It's a cultural gateway, it's a temporal gateway, and it's a physical gateway. And by physical gateway, I mean that golden triangle, that connection between the Indiana Dunes National Park, which is, why do people come here? Why do people come and visit? It's not to go to the power plant. It's to go to the lake. It's to go sailing. It's to go to the beach. It's to visit friends and family. It's to walk in the dunes and see the wetlands and the birds. And so, the NIPSCO site is never going to be part of the national park. But what it can be is a gateway that connects that national park to the harbor, to Washington Park.
Corrigan was one of many local artists at an event hosted by Just Transition Northwest Indiana. They asked local artists to envision a future for the site, and while many came with artistic renderings, Corrigan looked toward a more formal plan as part of his graduate school studies. While several plans have been proposed for the site's future use, from an entertainment center to an arcade, Thomas believes that the site can be used to tell a local story about the region.
Is that going to test the time, or can we put in something art-based, history-based, and make something...
While there are certainly proposals and ideas in the works for what we will see become of the plant after its 2028 retirement, nothing is official. According to NIPSCO's statement to WNUR News, quote, NIPSCO's generation transition is well underway, with the predominance of its future energy mix to be comprised of renewable energy sources. NIPSCO has not announced plans regarding the potential use of NIPSCO's Michigan City Generating Station property, unquote.
The concerns don't start and end with the site, however, as alternatives have already begun. In response to the pollution and the opportunity for work among residents, Scully launched the Soul Power Program.
That program is 6 months long, and so they have to do solar design, they learn about solar racking, they learn about energy usage and how much solar will need to be racked in order to be able to accommodate a building, whether it be residential or commercial.
This free training program sets up opportunities for residents to receive certifications to work towards a future built around solar energy. The program was designed especially for those who are affected by environmental pollution, as well as returnees from prison, those living in poverty, and veterans.
So it is a way to help those individuals who've been most impacted by solar pollution to sort of equal the playing field, to help give them individuals in our community the tools and the skills to compete in the 21st century.
Through this process, these local leaders have been working toward the betterment of their surrounding communities. In doing so, they're trying to combat complacency with environmental harms and create a brighter future for Northwest Indiana residents. Just Transition Northwest Indiana also partnered with Earth Justice and over 20 other organizations to file a lawsuit against the EPA. The lawsuit looked to close loopholes from the 2015 Coal Combustion Residuals Rule, which excluded coal ash in landfills under certain timeframes. They were successful in doing so, allowing for more accountability in the cleanup process.
Looking toward the future of this site, there are fears about complacency among residents. In a city where so many people are working multiple jobs, starting families, and dealing with these same water quality issues for years, Williams hopes to reframe the narrative.
We just wanted to be able to set forth this framework and get people thinking about how they can reshape, right, this sort of forced reality we live in today, because folks only see that it has to continue to be the status quo.
For WNUR News, I'm John Kowalski.
And I'm Gabe Shumway.
The average temperature in Chicago has finally crawled its way back out of the negatives. But even though the weather has warmed up slightly, there's still a type of cold that's sticking around. Find out more in this week's episode of Fairweather Friends with Juliet Allen reporting.
Hi, I'm Juliet. Welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather. I wonder when that giant snowman on Deering Meadow will fully melt. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends.
Here's the weather.
It's time to trade your winter coat for a rain jacket. Evanston has been slowly defrosting after last week's frigid temperatures. This week, we've seen highs in the 40s, with a mix of clouds and sun. But, as always, the wind chill was no joke, keeping the feels-like temp in the 20s. This weekend will start off cool and cloudy. Sunday will offer some warmth, with temps climbing into the low 50s and mild winds. Enjoy it while it lasts, though, because by Monday, we're back to cooler, breezy conditions. Next week, expect a mix of clouds, chilly temps, and some precipitation. A midweek system could bring freezing drizzle and rain, and by Thursday, we might even see some thunderstorms. After that, we'll cool down again heading into Friday, with highs hovering around freezing. Essentially, be prepared for everything this week. It's important to stay warm and dry. It's cold season, and I'm not just talking about the temperature. At some point in your life, you've probably been told that you need to bundle up before going out on a chilly day or else you'll catch a cold. And it's true that common colds are more, well, common during winter months. But despite the name, you're not going to get sick just by forgetting your coat. So why is it called that? Well, the term cold actually dates back hundreds of years when people did believe that cold air was the main cause of sickness. We know now that the signature sniffles, coughs, and sore throats are caused by a virus, but the name stuck around. That said, cold weather can affect our health. In Chicago, rapid shifts in weather create unstable atmospheric conditions, bringing cold fronts, storms, and pressure changes. And when the weather swings from warm to cold and back again, it can throw our bodies off balance. Sudden drops in temperature can cause blood vessels in our respiratory system to constrict. This reduces circulation in the nose and throat, our first lines of defense against airborne viruses. Plus, shifts in humidity can irritate our airways. Finally, cold weather also means that we spend more time indoors. This close proximity increases the chances of spreading germs. Basically, when someone says they're under the weather, they mean it. That's all for this week's edition of Fairweather Friends. Thanks for achoo tuning in. In Evanston, Illinois, Juliet Allen, WNUR News.
And from the weather, we start taking a look into the headlines. As mentioned earlier, The Meow Show is back for its 51st season this weekend. Northwestern's longest-running improv group will put on its latest show, The Meowgic School Bus, this weekend in Shanley Pavilion. The four shows this weekend will all have their opening sketches based off the popular children's show, The Magic School Bus. Meow self-describes as one-third sketch comedy, one-third improv, and one-third music. And after this weekend, they'll be back in the lab for a new set of shows at the end of February. In Chicago, State Representative Robin Gable introduced a measure in the Illinois State House that could authorize medically assisted dying. Gable, a Democrat from Evanston, argued that the bill offers a more humane way for terminally ill and mentally competent patients to end their own lives. The patients who request medically assisted death would self-administer the medication. Currently, 10 states, as well as Washington, D.C., have legalized medically assisted dying. Speaking of Washington, D.C., investigations of the deadly helicopter crash that took place on Wednesday continue this week. Authorities have recovered black boxes from both the commercial airliner and the Black Hawk helicopter, which collided 2 days ago. Black boxes record the cockpit voices and flight data, which can help authorities reconstruct the events that led up to the crash. The Federal Aviation Administration has shut down the low-altitude helicopter corridor that the Black Hawk helicopter was traveling on Wednesday for an indefinite period of time. And finally, Donald Trump's administration is planning on continuing its love affair with tariffs. Tomorrow morning, tariffs will be imposed on goods from Mexico, Canada, and China. The tariffs on Mexico and Canada will be instituted at 25%, while the tariffs on China will be instituted at 10%. Those three nations account for 40% of all imports to the United States, and many economists view that the tariffs could hike up prices for the American consumer. Both Canada and Mexico have said they will respond to tariffs with economic measures of their own, starting fears of a trade war. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter, now apparently known as X, at WNUR News. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNUR.news. That's WNUR.news. And you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Our producer today is Mika Ellison, and our reporters are Juliet Allen, Jessica Watts, Brandon Kondritz, Mariah Petway, Ella Barnes, Yumi Talud, Gabe Shumway, and John Kowalski. From all of us here at WNUR News, thank you so much for listening. I have been Brendan Prizman. Make sure to catch our next newscast on Monday, February 3rd at 6 p.m. Now, back to scheduled programming.